time on this same meeting link. If you're unable to make this time, please send a note to minhowlive@gmail.com. That's minhowlive@gmail.com. The audio portion of this program is being recorded. Please visit our website at minhowlive.org to download the files. We ask that if you need to eat during the meeting, please sit quietly in the back of the room. For those in person, please take a moment to silence or turn off your cell phones and do not connect to the room's Wi-Fi. To open the meeting, let us have a moment of quiet meditation. And for those who wish, join us in saying the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thy will, not mine, be done. I assume I'm not alone this evening, but for the record, are there any other compulsive eaters at this meeting other than myself?
Hi.
The We Care folder will be circulating in the room for the duration of the meeting. The first time for you to list your name, telephone number, and email, and the rest for you to take names and phone numbers to call during the week. If you're joining us remotely, please use the meeting's chat function as a virtual We Care book and enter your first name, phone number, times available for phone calls. And whether or not you are currently a sponsor in the OA How format, we will then add you to the We Care book that is being circulated in the room. A copy of this list can be sent to you via email after the meeting. Our preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and mutual support, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and carry this message of recovery to those who still suffer. Would someone please read What Is How?
Oh, that's me. Hello. Hi,
hello.
There I am.
Hi, Rebecca.
I'm Jane, compulsive overeater. Hi. What is How? How is a movement within Overeaters Anonymous whose basic principle is that abstinence is the only means to freedom from compulsive overeating and the beginning of a spiritual life. Where and why did How begin? How began in Phoenix in 1981 as a means of reviving a group called OA Victorious. Its meeting format is taken from Roseanne's book, I Put My Hand in Yours, and centers around the concept of service. Many of the questions used in How sponsoring stem from OA Plus and Westminster groups. The outline of service came from the OA Suffolk County, New York Sponsors Guide. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane. Would someone please read The Only Requirement? We can't hear you, Lisa.
There you go. Sorry.
Now there we go. Good. Okay.
Lisa J. in Portland, Oregon, a compulsive overeater. The only requirement. Overeaters Anonymous respects the autonomy of each OA group. We do suggest, however, that any group that has requirements in addition to the suggested 12 steps and 12 traditions inform its members that these requirements are what that particular group has found effective in working the program and do not represent OA as a whole. The members of this group have found the How concept to be effective in working the OA program. The opinions expressed here this afternoon by those who share, or this evening, are their own and not necessarily those of OA. The Board of Trustees states, we understand the third tradition to mean that individual ways of working one's program should not exclude any compulsive overeater from attendance and participation at OA meetings anywhere, anytime. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop eating compulsively. Anyone who says she or he is a member is a member. We of Overeaters Anonymous welcome all members with open arms. Thanks.
Thank you. Would someone please read the how concept?
Kristen P., a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Jan.
Hi, Kristen.
Kristen, okay.
The Overeaters Anonymous HOW meetings have been formed to offer the compulsive...
We don't see you.
I haven't been able to turn it on yet.
No problem. Okay. We'll listen.
Thank you. Have been formed to offer the compulsive overeater who accepts the 12 steps and 12 traditions as a program of recovery, a disciplined and structured approach. How groups are formed in the belief that our disease is absolute and that only absolute acceptance of the OA program will offer any sustained abstinence to those of us whose compulsion has reached a critical level. Therefore, we accept the 9 tools of the program and the 12 steps and 12 traditions as necessary for our recovery. In OA HOW, our daily action plan is outlined in the structured use of each of the other tools. Our meetings are dedicated to the concept of remaining honest, open-minded, and willing to listen. This is the how of the program. We pray that the collective group conscience and love that these ideals offer us will promote a strong sense of security that will enable us to experience a new unity and wholeness with all those around us, and that the how ideals will help us to progress in our program of recovery on a daily basis. To be certain, much of our strength is found in the structure of meetings and in the daily adherence to the program as it is written in our literature. The Tuesday evening meeting also firmly understands that after our recovery has begun through abstinence and the taking of the first 3 steps, our further surrender to the additional steps of recovery offer us a promise of happiness, contentment, and achievement in all areas of our lives. We ensure continued and sustained abstinence from compulsive overeating by being forever aware that God is doing for us what we have never been able to do for ourselves. May God, as each of us understands him, open our minds and our hearts to the love which is manifested on this meeting. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Kristen. Would someone please read reflections for the newcomer?
Good evening, everybody. Elizabeth P. calling in from Delaware. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. Hi, Elizabeth. Hi. Well, thank you.
All right. Reflections for the newcomer. Welcome to OA HOW. We are all so glad that you have decided to become a part of our fellowship. You know that the HOW concept is a disciplined program. We believe that the discipline of weighing and measuring, of telephoning your sponsor at a particular time, of attending meetings and making phone calls, all lead to a life based on the universal discipline, which is accord rather than discord, even with many things going on around us. Therefore, if there is a breakdown in any of these areas, the concept is threatened, as is the individual's abstinence. We have found that the discipline must remain as constant for the beginner as for the sponsor. If the newcomer shies away from this life's responsibility, the sponsor may give the newcomer's time slot to someone more committed to recovery. This is not a personal affront, but a matter of necessity. So many who think they should recover, in fact, are not ready. If the newcomer should show lack of commitment, the sponsor may then offer the newcomer assistance in finding a new sponsor. The rationale here is, if the newcomer insists on picking up the food before the phone, then there is a breakdown in the level of communication between the sponsor and the newcomer. Frothy emotional appeals seldom suffice. That's the doctor's opinion, big book, page XXVI, paragraph 2. If a sponsor slips, get a new one. The pitfalls of self-deception cannot be overstressed if you are to recover. Therefore, a sponsor, in all self-honesty, must release all sponsees to continue his own recovery. A sponsor cannot give what he does not experience. Finally, you must believe that we need each other. All problems that arise can be worked on via the phone or person-to-person contact. Only positive, upbeat recovery belongs at our meetings. A body badly burned by alcohol does not often recover overnight, nor do twisted thinking and depression vanish in a twinkling. We are convinced that a spiritual mode of living is a most powerful restorative. Good luck. Everyone in the fellowship is praying that you find the release from the obsession so many of us have. God bless. And no matter what, keep coming back. We will always be here for you.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Would someone please read an excerpt from step two of the OA 12 and 12?
Hello, my name is Tamara. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Tamara.
Hello, everyone. When we look with complete honesty at our lives, we see that where eating is concerned, we've acted in an extremely irrational and self-destructive manner. Under the compulsion to overeat, many of us have done things no sane person would think of doing. We've driven miles in the dead of night to satisfy a craving for food. We've eaten food that was frozen, burnt, stale, or even dangerously spoiled. We've eaten food off of other people's plates, off the floor, off the ground. We've dug food out of the garbage and eaten it. We have frequently lied about what we've eaten, lied to others because we didn't want to face the truth ourselves. We've stolen food from our friends, family, and employers, as well as from the grocery store. We've also stolen money to buy food. We've eaten beyond the point of being full, beyond the point of being sick of eating. We've continued to overeat, knowing all the while we were disfiguring and maiming our bodies. We have isolated ourselves to eat, damaging our relationships, and denying ourselves a full social life. For the sake of our compulsive eating, we've turned ourselves into objects of ridicule, and we have destroyed our health. Then, horrified by what we were doing to ourselves with food, we became obsessed with diets. We spent hundreds of dollars on weight loss schemes. We bought all sorts of appetite control drugs. We joined diet clubs and spas. We had ourselves hypnotized and analyzed. We had major surgery on our digestive systems. We had our ears stapled or our jaws wired shut. All of this we did willingly, hoping we could someday have our cake and eat it too. Some of us went from doctor to doctor looking for a cure. The doctors gave us diets, but we had no better success with those than with other diets we'd been on. The doctors gave us shots and pills. They worked for a while, but we inevitably lost control and overate again, putting back on the weight we had worked so hard to lose. Many of us tried fasting with and without a doctor's supervision. Usually we lost weight, but as soon as we started eating again, the compulsive eating behavior returned, along with the weight. Some of us learned to purge ourselves with vomiting, laxatives, or excessive exercise. We'd stuff food in our mouths until we were in physical pain. Then we'd get rid of it. We damaged our digestive systems and our teeth while we starved our body of nutrients needed to live. Those of us who were overweight got plenty of advice from others about how to get to our ideal size, but nothing permanently solved our problem. We found that no matter what we did to ease our turmoil, our compulsive eating eventually returned. Over the long haul, our weight went up and our self-esteem went down. After a while, we became battle-weary and discouraged. Still, we could never accept our powerlessness. The prospect of being obese, sick, and out of control for the rest of our lives led some of us to conclude that life was simply not worth living. Many of us thought about suicide, and some of us tried it. Most of us, however, never reached suicidal desperation. Instead, we took comfort in knowing that everything was all right as long as we got enough to eat. The only trouble was that as our compulsive eating progressed, it became harder for us to get enough. Instead of bringing comfort, the overeating backfired. The more we ate, the more we suffered, yet we continued to overeat. Our true insanity could be seen in the fact that we kept right on trying to find comfort in excess food, long after it began to cause us misery. Pass.
Would someone please read from chapter 5 of the book Alcoholics Anonymous, How It Works?
Hi, everyone. I'm Liz A., grateful compulsive overeater and food addict in Florida.
Hi, Liz. Welcome.
Okay. Alrighty. Chapter 5, How It Works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these, we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with food, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us, but there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. Thanks, I pass.
Thanks, Liz. Thanks, Liz. Would someone please read the 12 steps of recovery?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, great. Hi, this is Maggie. I'm a compulsive eater and food addict in Toronto. Okay.
Hi, Maggie. Welcome.
Hi. Okay, thanks for your service. Okay, so the 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. Number one, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Number two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Number three, I'm hearing a lot of background noise, like pages turning or something. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, we direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we try to carry this message to other compulsive eaters and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Thank you.
Thanks. Thanks, Maggie. Thanks. Do you have the back of that, Maggie? Do you have the back?
What?
You have the last of it, many of us explained.
No, I don't. That's all I've got.
Okay. You want me to do it or no? Many of us exclaimed, what an order. I can't go through with it. Don't worry. Many of us have thought and said the same thing. The truth is that it is the weakness that binds us together and helps us to do what we could not do alone. I did that from memory and think I jumped, but thank you. All right. Would someone please read the 12 traditions of the program?
Hi, everyone. I'm Rebecca, compulsive eater.
Hi, Rebecca. Welcome.
12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest money's problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, OA as such ought never be organized. We may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. I pass.
The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous are a program of recovery. Webster's Dictionary defines tool as any person or thing used to get something done. We have many tools of the program which will help us to recover on a daily basis. Tools are essential to get the job done, and they work for us. In order for a tool to work, it must be used.
What?
Yeah. So too with our tools of recovery. I will ask that how sponsors explain how they use a particular tool with a limit of 3 minutes for each tool. Would someone be willing to be the timekeeper? Thanks, Heidi. Thanks, Heidi. Virtual participants will receive their timing prompts via chat. Abstinence, plan of eating. Deborah, are you there? Here, you come on up here, I'll get your kid out for you.
Hi, I'm Heidi, a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Heidi, welcome.
Thank you. The plan of eating. A food plan is a commitment to recovery. The OA How, the How disciplines were designed for food addicted people. We believe in a disciplined and structured approach. How abstainers do not modify their food plan to suit themselves and commit themselves to black and white abstinence. Deviations invite the return of many other problems. A food plan is not a personal thing in How. This means that we depend upon each other for the strength and growth that we need to remain abstinent. We join together in an effort to free the compulsive overeater from the bondage of food through the use of a food plan, positive thinking, and the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. We eat weighed and measured meals with nothing in between except sugar-free beverages and sugar-free gum. Food is written down, called into our sponsor, and committed so that we can get on with our recovery and out of the food. We also believe that negative thinking is a large part of our disease, so we abstain from negative thinking. Those of us who work the How program concepts use the following guidelines for food plans. 1, we do not write our own food plan. We write a food plan given to us by a doctor, nutritionist, or dietitian. We discuss it with our sponsor. We do not pick one that allows any of our binge foods. If some food on our plan becomes a problem, we avoid it. 2, unless approved by a sponsor, we do not skip meals, switch meals, or combine meals. We do not deviate or manipulate our food plan in any way. If we need to change our committed food during the day, we call a sponsor. We weigh and measure all of our portions so that there is no guesswork. We do not measure by eye. We use a measuring cup, spoon, and a scale, and I will demonstrate that for you. Many of us started with what we call a spring-loaded scale. The main thing is to set it on a flat level surface, steady surface, not your hand. And then there's a little button or a little turn in the back. You can make sure that it starts exactly on zero. And then you will put your food in there. And if you get 3 ounces of chicken, you want to put it in there until the line exactly splits the 3 on the scale. You don't want to have, you know, I know they say 3.1 or 2.9. In my case, it was you don't want like 8 ounces or nothing. You want to have exactly what's prescribed for you by your doctor, nutritionist, or dietitian. And then there's also a handy digital scale that many of us use. The nice thing about this is I can put my plate on here. There's a button called tear, which also zeroes out your scale number. And you can build a meal. And technically, you're supposed to have fewer dishes. That has never really worked for me. But so I put my plate on here, and I measure out my 3 ounces of protein. And then I hit the tear or the zero button again. And then I can put on my 3 ounces of sweet potatoes or whatever my starch is. I can zero it out again and put on... I use a cup for vegetables, so I would use a cup and I would add it to my plate. And some people have switched to weighing everything. Some people still measure, and I'll show you some of the other tools we use for measuring. The main thing is that you're consistent and honest. If you get 3 ounces, you take 3 ounces and you don't take more than that or less. I never had that problem though. Cups and spoons we use. I've come to find out that these little ones are for fats, not the big ones. And whatever we get, whether it's a teaspoon or a tablespoon or a cup or a half a cup, we put in there and we pack it down, or however we put it in, we're consistent. We do it the same way every time. We don't decide one day we don't feel so hungry, so we're just going to dribble it in there. And another day we're really hungry and we're going to shove it in there. We're consistent. We just do it the same every day. And we take a straight edge. And we take off anything that's on the top. The important thing is we get, and we should have everything that's inside of the measuring tool, but we don't have anything on here or outside or anything that fell anywhere. That's not ours for this meal, so we leave it alone. And some of us use liquid measurements. I use a liquid measuring cup for broth and for milk. And again, you'd put it on a flat surface. You either get down to where you can see it or you put it up on a cupboard. And you want to, I get a cup of milk. I make sure it just goes right to the line and doesn't mess with my head. I just take what I'm supposed to have. And if I need to take a little out, I do. Or if I need to add a little, but I want it to cross the line exactly. And then the other thing that we all use in our abstinence kit is probably not a flip phone. Any phone will work. I'm not sure this one will work, but any phone that works will work. What we do is we call our sponsor every day on a time that you've agreed upon with your sponsor. And I read to her what I'm going to have on my plan. You know, breakfast is 2 eggs, 3/4 of a cup of oatmeal, 2 tablespoons of raisins, 1 tablespoon of nuts, 8 ounces of milk almost every day of my life. So I know that, but I write it down every day and I call it in. If for whatever reason, something is missing, or I thought I had more oatmeal and I don't, I need to make a food change. I pick up my phone, I call my sponsor, and if she's not there, I try 2 other sponsors. If it's an even change, you know, my 3/4 of a cup of oatmeal for 1 piece of bread or whatever an even exchange is for me, then I can leave that on a voicemail and go ahead and make the change after I've called my sponsor and 2 others. If it's something more difficult, I've had a salad and I've knocked it off my lap and it's gone all over the floor after I started eating it and I don't know how much, and I have 3 cats. I'm not eating anything off the floor in my house. So I call a sponsor and I tell them, and they'll probably ask me some questions and I'll answer them, and they'll give me a suggestion on what to do for that meal, and I take their suggestion and I do it, and then I let it go and I move on with my the rest of my day. So we use this kit to get, like they say, on out of the food and on with our life. Number 4, we weigh ourselves once a month until we reach goal weight and once a week on maintenance. Number 5, unless advised otherwise by your doctor, we take a multivitamin and drink 64 ounces of water a day. Number 6, we do not drink alcohol. Number 7, we do not use foods containing sugar except if sugar is listed 5th or beyond in the ingredients label. Above all, we do not vacillate or water down the disciplined nature of the HOW program. It is not the extra string bean that counts. It is the decision to take it. you kind of time me for 3 minutes.
Sure.
Okay. So what I wanted to talk about is for those, if you're new to the program, doing this kit here, putting down the food, is what enabled me to do everything else that you're going to hear about from here on out in this meeting. Without doing this, I couldn't honestly do any of the rest of the tools or even stand up here and do a reading, really. I mean, I just, this was a requirement for me. And oddly enough, and I don't know how it happens, but when I put the food down, the cravings for me left very quickly. And I don't know how that works because I tried to do it on my own for years. I probably never really put sugar down. So I got went to my nutritionist and she prescribed me what was right for me. And I weigh and measure it out and I just do it one day. And if it works, then I'm going to do it again the next day. And then I just keep doing it day after day, and days seem to add up into other days. And the fact that Christmas is coming up again, and I actually made Christmas cookies with my mom a few weeks ago for an event that I needed to bring the dessert to. And I was specifically asked not to bring fruit for a dessert again. That's my go-to for desserts, was fruit. But so I said, okay, my mom and I baked together, and it actually was quite freeing. I knew it wasn't for me. My problem is when I try to figure out how much of something I can have. And I know that that wasn't on my list. I knew if I wanted something that we were baking, I'd have to call and commit it to my sponsor first, which clearly I didn't want to do. But it didn't call to me. There was nothing about that day other than it was a great time for my mom and I. She did most of the mixing because I didn't want it to splatter on me. And I did a lot of the cleanup as we went. And we really connected and had a great time together. So doing this and having a plan of eating is really what allows me to work the rest of the steps in my life and get on with my life and out of the food. And for that, I am sincerely grateful. And thank you for being on the meeting tonight.
Thanks, Heidi. Sponsorship. There she is.
All righty. Hi, everyone. Liz A. in Florida, still a grateful compulsive overeater.
Hi, Liz.
Sponsorship. Sponsors are OA members who are committed to abstinence and to living the 12 steps and 12 traditions to the best of their ability. We ask a sponsor to guide us through our program of recovery on all three levels, physical, emotional, and spiritual. In working with other members of OA and sharing their experience, strength, and hope. Let's see. Oh. Sponsors continually renew and reaffirm their own sobriety. Sponsors share their program up to the level of their own experience. Ours is a program of attraction. Find a sponsor who has what you want and ask how it was achieved. A member may work with more than one sponsor and may change sponsors at will. A house sponsor is a compulsive overeater who has completed at least 70 days of back-to-back abstinence and who has taken the first three steps of the program. Sponsors have also completed at least 70 days of assignments. Reflections to the sponsor, suggestions for discussion. No list of reflections and meditations are end-alls and be-alls for the newcomer. A sponsor must be attentive not only to what the new person is saying, but to what the newcomer is not saying. There are many newcomers who are reticent to purchase books and who are hesitant to throw themselves headlong into the program. Therefore, we have a list of pre-commitment assignments. Above all, we do not vacillate or water down the disciplined nature of the HOW program. It is the extra string bean that is the problem. Oh, it is not the extra string bean that is the problem. It is the decision to have it that results in some trouble. The HOW concept is an alternative for people who have tried everything else. Therefore, the program is an immutable triumvirate of tools, steps, and traditions. Using the tools of weighing and measuring our food, sponsors, meetings, phone calls, readings and writing, service, and anonymity, we follow the 12 steps and 12 traditions of OA in order to free ourselves from the bondage of food addiction. Sponsors do not have the right to play God. We help each other. So I call my sponsor every day at the same time. If it's 8:30, it's not 8:29, it's not 8:31. I respect her time. She's given me 15 minutes of undivided attention every day. And so when I call her, I'm ready with my food. The first thing I give away to my sponsor is my food plan. I write it down the night before. I physically check everything that I have is good. It's not spoiled. That way I don't have to call my sponsor to make food changes. And I don't rush through it 5 minutes before because I might make a mistake, a tablespoon instead of a teaspoon, and I'll forget, you know, a fat or something. I also have my writing ready. If it's gratitudes, if you're working on the first 30 questions, if you're working on the steps, and I take the time to make sure that, you know, I've done my writing. On the rare occasion that I don't get it done, I'm honest with them and I tell them that I don't have it ready, and she may tell me to get a temp sponsor and do my writing and call them when I have it ready. So with my sponsor, I go through the first 70 questions, and after I finish the questions, I got on the sponsor line if I was absent for those 70 days doing those questions. And at that point, I'll then guide somebody else up to the level of my own recovery. So I'm working on step 4. And with my new sponsee, we start with a prayer, and then I'll ask them a couple of questions to report in every day. What did they do yesterday to maintain their abstinence and their spiritual and emotional recovery? I'll start with, were you abstinent? And then my sponsee commits her food. If they made any changes, hopefully I'll know about it because they'll have called me and made the change. And then I'll ask them, you know, to give me their writing and their gratitudes. And do they make 4 phone calls? What service did they do? My sponsor taught me never to turn down an opportunity to do service. And she had me reading the beginning readings at my very first meeting, and then pitching on a tool when I became a sponsor. And then we'll go through their action plan and the rest of their tools. Do they attend a meeting? So what we don't do is discuss if they have marital problems, financial problems, or health problems, because I don't counsel them. I'm not a therapist. I just dedicate 15 minutes to listening to their reading, writing, committing their food, and then I answer any questions that they may have. And eventually I'll actually take them through the steps. And like the reading says, you know, we don't have the right to play God. I just offer whatever experience, strength, and hope I have. And I think my time is up, so I'm going to pass. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Liz. Will all sponsors, How and OA, please join me in sharing the following. Excuse me. How long in OA and How? How long abstinent in OA and How? How much weight lost or gained? This is not a time for sharing for sponsors. Please keep it brief and no applauding between sponsors. If they wish to, sponsors can announce that they have an opening for a sponsee and provide their phone numbers. Please form a line behind me, starting at the microphone, and continue behind me. Remote sponsors are invited to share following our line by clicking raise hand button and turning on your video camera, or just turning on your video. When it is your turn to share, you will hear your name and see a "You are unmuted by host" screen prompt. Following your share, please turn off your video as the meeting moderator remutes your line. Sponsors joining us on the phone, please wait for a pause in the line and press *6 on your telephone keypad. All right, here we go.
Hi, I'm Howard, a compulsive overeater. I'm a sponsor on the late shift. I've been abstaining a little over 33 years. I have 18 years and 4 months of abstinence in OA. How I've gained 10 pounds and a little bit of sanity.
Hi, my name is Peg. I'm a compulsive overeater. I first came to OA in 1979. I committed myself to the OA HAL program in March of 2004. In the 12 and a half years I was in the program, I lost 160 pounds and then fell to the delusion that I could do this myself. I've been back. My abstinence date is June 3rd of 2019, and in my return, I've lost 25 pounds.
Hi, I'm Heidi, a compulsive overeater. I came directly into Howe in October of 2007. I lost 150 pounds and kept it off for 7 years, and then I chose to leave the program. I quickly gained 110 pounds back of that, and I rejoined a few years later, and I am currently down 66 pounds.
Melanie.
Hi, everyone. My name is Melanie. I'm a recovered compulsive eater. OA House. Great to be here. I'm in Oregon today. I was first introduced to Overeaters Anonymous in the fall of 1989.
Just fucking
absence. I have a Howe absence date, however. Pass. Thanks. Bye.
Kelly.
Hi. Hi, this is Kelly, compulsive overeater in California. I came to Howe in October 2019. My back-to-back abstinence date is February 27th. I am maintaining a 70-pound weight loss in Howe. Kelly, Southern California. Grateful to be doing it with you. Pass.
Kirsten.
Hi, I'm Kirsten P., a compulsive overeater. My abstinence date is June 18th, 2001. I'm maintaining a 60-pound weight loss.
Jana.
Hi, this is Jana B., compulsive overeater in California. I'm a two-hour Howe format sponsor. I have released about 22 pounds and maintained that for a few years. And let's see, did I forget something? I always do. My back-to-back recommitted abstinence date is August 4, 2014. Thanks. Bye.
Berlinda.
Linda, we can't hear you.
Liz.
Hi, everyone. I'm Liz A. Start my video. Okay, here we go. Hi, everyone. Liz A, and I'm a compulsive overeater and food addict in Ormond Beach, Florida. I joined OA in 1982, and I began working the two-hour Howe format in 2018. My back-to-back abstinence date is 8-8-2019. And I am a sponsor in the two-hour Howe format, and I've released 50 pounds, 28 of those in Howe. Thanks, I pass.
Patrick.
Hello, my name's Patrick. I'm a compulsive overeater. I first came to OA Howe in August of 2015. My back-to-back abstinence date is from August of 2018. I've been relieved of 170 pounds and no longer require diabetic medication.
Patty.
Hi, I am Patty from Illinois. And I am, oh gosh, wait a minute. I might have to click something here. Okay, I'm Patty from Illinois, and I am a two-hour OA House sponsor. I am abstinent since September 30th, 2017. I've been released of 39 pounds, and that's Patty from Illinois.
Debbie.
Hi, my name is Debbie. I'm a compulsive overeater in Minnesota, and my abstinence date is October 18th, 2018, and I am down about 100 pounds. Debbie from Minnesota.
Linda, you want to try again?
Oh. Sorry, Erlinda. Is there anyone else? All right, thank you. Clay feet. We should remember that all OAs have clay feet. We should not set any member upon a pedestal and mark him or her out as a perfect OA. It is not fair to the person to be singled out in this fashion, and if the person is wise, he or she will not wish for it. If the person we single out as an ideal OA has a fall, we are in danger of falling too. Without exception, we are all only one bite away from a binge. No matter how long we've been in OA or how, nobody is entirely safe. OA itself should be our ideal, not any particular member of it. Anonymity. Does someone have anonymity?
Hi, I do. Hopefully my bandwidth is okay now. Just let
Sounds
me know.
Sounds like it, Emily. Melanie, we can hear you clearly.
Yeah. Can you hear me though?
Yes, no? We can. Okay. Thank you.
Great. Thanks. Melanie, recovered compulsive overeater from Oregon. And as a tradition, because it guarantees four personalities, it offers each an expression and protection against gossip. Anonymity assures us that only we have membership known within our community. And other public media of communication means that we never allow our face to identify ourselves as OA members. Within the member will be held in respect and competence. What we hear at meetings should not be used to limit our effectiveness within the fellowship. It is or to other service offices away it is primarily 12-step work. It is likewise not for group members in trouble, provided we are careful to omit specific personal information. And we persist in protecting their anonymity, we may and their anonymity program that allows each of us to stand in front of our fellow honestly who we are, where we have been, and where we will be told outside these rooms. For many of us, the OA rooms are the first place criticized. We are accepted as we are at the moment. This perspective is sharing where we are not told what we did wrong. We come into OA. We are supported back to health. We are encouraged to speak of our pain and we are lovingly told your secrets. Level. Physical, lastly, a word to newcomers, please join us. However, if you decide, pardon me.
Melanie?
Please remember that our anonymity, yes.
I'm sorry, your bandwidth is not adequate, and so we're only hearing about every fifth word from you. So we've got someone else who's going to finish up on the tool. I'm sorry, I'd love to hear what you have to say.
Hi, I'm Heidi, compulsive overeater. Anonymity. Anonymity is a tool as well as a tradition because it guarantees that we will place principles before personalities. It offers each of us freedom of expression and protection against gossip. Anonymity assures us that only we as individual OA members have the right to make our membership known within our community. Anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication means that we never allow our faces or last names to be used once we identify ourselves as OA members. Within the fellowship, anonymity means that whatever we share with another OA member will be held in respect and confidence. What we hear at meetings should remain there. It should be understood, however, that anonymity must not be used to limit our effectiveness within the fellowship. It is not a break of anonymity to give our names and addresses to the secretary of our group or to other service offices of OA for the purpose of conducting OA business, which is primarily 12-step work. It is likewise not a break of anonymity to enlist 12-step help for group members in trouble, provided we are careful to omit specific personal information. If their disease has reactivated and we persist in protecting their anonymity, we may in effect help kill them and their anonymity. And anonymity is the part of the program that allows each of us to stand in front of our fellows and share for the first time, honestly, who we are, where we have been, and where we hope to go, without fear that our story will be told outside of these rooms. For many of us, the OA rooms are the first place where we have no fear of being judged or criticized. We are accepted as we are at that moment. This is the first time for most of us that we experience sharing where we are not told what we did wrong. We come into OA at rock bottom, mangled emotionally, physically, and spiritually. We are supported back to health with honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. We are encouraged to speak of our pain, and we are lovingly told your secrets are safe. Come share our recovery, recovery on a threefold level, physical, emotional, and spiritual. Lastly, a word to newcomers, please join us. However, if you decide that our program is not for you, please remember that our anonymity allows us to grow and recover from a very serious disease. Whom you see here, what you hear here, when you leave here, let it stay here.
Here, here.
Here, here. I want to read something, but first I just wanted to share for those that are new, in our program, we kind of take anonymity to a level that's safe for us. We don't share the names of people that we talk to on our hookup calls, and we don't share the names of our sponsors or our sponsees. And for me, that's helpful for me because if I'm having a problem with my sponsor, I want to be able to, I don't even say my sponsor, I just say somebody else. It doesn't matter that they're my sponsor when I'm talking to somebody in the program. But if I have a problem with somebody, I can talk about it without it being about that person, because generally I've found when I have a problem with someone, it's my problem and I have to figure out how to work with that. And I don't want it to be because of who the other person is, and I don't want the person I'm talking to make an opinion about somebody else, because that's not the point of my conversation with them. So I want to be able to share what I need to move on with my day and without sharing that. And then we also don't share other people's stories. If I have a conversation with Peg here, I share about my day or about what's going on with me. I don't share what I heard from someone else on a hookup call. And if Peg shares something with me, I don't go on and share that with somebody else. That's not my story to tell. But it is my story to tell about me. And that's what we're encouraged to do in this program. And that amazingly helps a lot of things. Out of the God Grant Me book on October 29th, it says, this was supposed to be about anonymity, and I'm not seeing it right in there, so I'm not feeling it. So I'm grateful for anonymity. It really lets me share what's on my mind and in my head, mainly what's in my head, so I can get out of my head and on with my day. Thank you.
Thanks, Heidi. All right. Telephone calls.
Hi, this is Kelly again, compulsive overeater from California.
Hi, Kelly. Welcome. We're not hearing you, Kelly. Now we're seeing you straight on.
Okay. I was saying sometimes Howard says this is better. Is this better?
No.
I'm just going to go the other way. Okay. I'm going to go. Telephone. Compulsive overeating is a disease of isolation. The telephone is the means of communicating with other compulsive overeaters in between meetings. It provides an immediate outlet for those hard-to-handle highs and lows we all experience. The telephone is also a daily link to our sponsors, and as part of the surrender process, is a tool by which we learn to ask for help, reach out, and extend the same help to others. And how we are asked to make at least 4 telephone calls a day, 1 to our sponsor and 3 more to other OA members. These calls give us an opportunity to talk program on a daily basis. The telephone is our lifeline. So again, Kelly, compulsive overeater in California. And before coming to Howe, I was never on my phone. I'm a texter, but I don't pick up the phone. In fact, I don't even check voicemails. My voicemails have recordings of my kids when they were little, and it's completely full. But when I came to Howe, I was told I had to make 4 phone calls, and I feel like I'm the literature of what in order. I can't go through with it. But these phone calls saved my life. I'm calling in on this meeting from, you guys are in Minnesota. I'm all the way in California on my phone. The call in the morning to my sponsor gets me grounded and set in my day. And then the hookup calls are one of my favorite parts of Howe. The best part about Howe is that you call people and they need calls too. So they call you back. This last year was really difficult for me personally. It was also my first year in Howe. So I had to feel all the feels without the food in program. And every time something happened, my first call was just someone in Howe. And I didn't even know these people a year ago. And that's how close these friendships have become. And because Howers are so good at answering the phone, I say if I ever go to jail and I have 1 call, I'm going to call someone in Howe because I swear you guys pick up. So the telephone keeps me connected with my sponsor, with my hookups, with the food change, with the food mistake, with the Telegram, WhatsApp. I know we're so lucky because Bill W. didn't have texting technology or video conferencing. You know, they did it just the old way. And now in 2019, almost 2020, we're able to recover from all over the world. You know, with the telephone. So one of the things that is valuable to me is my phone charger, and having your guys' numbers, saved. And so, just grateful to be here on my phone tonight, grateful for technology, grateful that my phone keeps me connected to all of you guys. So I don't go back in isolation. Cause once I'm there too long, then I pick up. So thanks for letting me share. Pass.
Thanks, Kelly. Meetings.
Patrick, compulsive overeating.
Hi, Patrick.
Tools, number 5, meetings. Meetings are gathering of 2 or more compulsive overeaters who come together to share their experience before and after recovery and to share the strength and hope OA has given them. Meetings are an opportunity for us to confirm and to identify and confirm our common problem by relating to one another and by sharing the gifts we receive through this program. We find that being on time for meetings enhances our recovery and provides service to the meeting. Though there are many kinds of meetings, fellowship is the basis of them all. As Howe members, we attend at least 1 Howe meeting a week. And that's what I'm doing tonight is attending my 1 Howe meeting a week. I typically have the opportunity to do a face-to-face meeting, but I'm traveling and will be traveling for the next month. I'm actually in Rock Springs, Wyoming tonight, and I'm really grateful for the opportunity to be able to attend a virtual meeting. You know, one of the things that I was taught early on in OA Howe is that the, the program is portable. It goes with me everywhere I go. If I have my phone and my books and my writing and the other tools, I can use this in any situation, in any given context. And I think that's what's important about this meeting in particular and just meetings in general. I'm abstinent because I attended a meeting of OA How and somebody approached me and asked me a few questions about sponsorship and so forth. And you know, it was a marriage of my willingness. Something had to change. I was 385 pounds and dying of type 2 diabetes. And I am now 215 pounds and no longer require diabetic medication. So I think the evidence of what attending meetings consistently and participating in the program can provide speaks for itself in our sponsor line. But without the meetings, I don't stay connected. I need this, as the previous speaker said, the grace of a virtual meeting, even a phone meeting if I have to while I'm on the road, I'll do, because it keeps me connected with the people that I share not just my disease with, but that I share this solution with. And for that, I'm really grateful, and I'll pass.
Do we have someone who wants it? My name is Peg. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Peg. Welcome.
Literature and writing. We studied the text Alcoholics Anonymous, referred to as the Big Book, and the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, another AA book to reinforce our program. By substituting the words food and compulsive eating for the words alcohol and alcoholism, we can identify closely. We also read OA literature, the OA book, Overeaters Anonymous, referred to as the Brown Book, the OA 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, For Today for Daily Meditation, and Lifeline, our Journal of Recovery. Read on a daily basis, our literature impresses on us certain basic truths that we have found vital to our growth. Our literature and the AA books are an ever-available tool that gives insight into our problem as well as the strength to deal with it and the very real hope that there is a solution for us. Writing. In addition to our writing, our inventories and the list of people we have harmed, most of us have found that writing has been an indispensable tool for working the steps. Further, putting our thoughts and feelings down on paper or describing a troubling incident helps us to better understand our actions and reactions in a way that is often not revealed to us by simply talking about them or thinking about them. In the past, compulsive eating was our most common reaction to life. When we put our difficulties down on paper, it becomes easier to see situations more clearly and perhaps better discern any necessary action. I'm kind of glad this tool was open, because this tool, since my return to OA How, has become for me the most critical tool of my program. And I say that because quitting doing this tool was what took me down. I was doing beautifully. I was in Europe. I was having no problem with my food. And at the end of about 25 days, I sent an email to four people in my program and said, so my food's going great, no concerns about that, but I haven't done an assignment for 25 days. So do you think I should start over, or what do you think? And one of those questions was to my sponsor. I said, you're all welcome to talk with each other about it. There's no anonymity needed here for me, but tell me what to do. And I got four different answers. But that's when I thought, well, I've done so well, you know. And I'd always said, the first thing I'm going to quit doing if I ever leave OA How, I'm going to quit these reading and writing assignments. I'm so tired of them. But the bottom line is, this is where I come to grips with who I am and what I need to do to stay sober, to stay recovered. I can talk a mile a minute in front of hundreds. But when I have to sit down and honestly communicate with myself the words from that book and say, this is how they apply to me, there's no one left to fool. The truth is there. So, you know, I came back and said, after all these years of thinking the vision for you was just my favorite reading, my favorite reading now comes right from the first first paragraph of chapter 3, which is the one that says, we all want to believe that someday, somehow, we will enjoy our eating. And I am so grateful for this tool, whether I feel like doing it or not. A tip I'll share that's been working for me since my recovery, I used to feel a lot of anxiety if I didn't have my homework done, and I would start resenting that I had to get it done. I'm a procrastinator I was born one. And so what I do now is when I finish my call with my sponsor in the morning, I immediately sit down and do my homework for the next day. The sense of peace that that brings to me and the readiness for my day is just overwhelming. And it keeps me from feeling like this program is just too much. So with that, I'll pass.
Thanks, Peg.
Thanks, Peg. Okay, service.
I'm Howard, a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Howard. Welcome.
Thank you. Carrying the message of the compulsive overeater who still suffers is the basic purpose of our fellowship and therefore the most fundamental form of service. Any service, no matter how small, that will help reach a fellow sufferer adds the quality of our own recovery. Putting away chairs, making coffee, talking to newcomers, doing whatever needs to be done in a group or for OA as a whole, are ways in which we give back what we have so generously been given. Do what you can when you can. A life of sane and happy usefulness is what we are promised as a result of working the 12 steps. Service fulfills that promise. Always to extend the hand and heart of OA to all who share my compulsion. For this I am responsible. So I was, when I started OA, I kind of just, was a visitor. I kind of just dabbled for about a year, maybe even a little bit more. So I would come to meetings somewhat consistently, but I would leave early. I would not volunteer. I just wasn't sure this was for me. You know, it seemed kind of extreme. This is even before how it seemed like it wasn't for me. You know, they're all women and everyone was old. So I didn't really think this was the right place for me. So I would come and go, and then I kind of stepped away for a little bit, probably for 3 weeks. And someone called me. And this was before, you know, we really had telephone. We all, you know, it wasn't usual that people would call each other. But someone called me and just said, hey, you know, I haven't seen you for a little bit in the meeting, and I hope to see you soon. And I said, well, yeah, I may I may come back, you know, so I'm been kind of busy, right? Isn't that, that's kind of the thing. Well, what happened to so-and-so? Well, they got busy, right? So I was busy and important. And so then she said, okay, well, good. Well, hung up, and you know, there's no way she realized how important that call was to me. You know, I was really surprised that anyone would bother calling me or care about me. And so that call probably saved my life. And I know she had no idea that anything became of it, because I was just so shocked and kind of withdrawn about everything, about the whole during the call. But yeah, I look back and that little bit of service of just calling me, it meant a lot, you know, and it probably kept me coming back. It was one of those touchstone moments. I look back and that's what kind of made this work. That kind of kept me coming back. And that was like 30 some years ago. And you know, I don't know if we're doing that kind of service anymore, but you know, I try to give a little bit to this program every day. I try to do a little service in this program every day, and it's worked for all these years. You know, I've stuck around, and I really found that when I was doing the convention, it gave me something to kind of focus on ahead in the future. So I would do the convention, and you know, I would look forward to it, and I also had responsibility for it, and then I would sign up again. I would say, well, I'm going to do this next year. And that would kind of keep my focus in the program and in service and in staying around, because I was going to be at that convention next year and be abstinent. So for me, it's an anchor. This is really an anchor for me, this doing the service. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thanks, Howard.
Thanks, Howard.
Will all people doing service for OA at any level please stand and applaud service? If you have not yet added your information to the chat for our We Care book, please take a moment to do so now so we can add it to the book here in the room. We will keep the We Care book circulating until everyone has had an opportunity to sign it. The folder will continue to circulate for the duration of the meeting so that everyone may take names and phone numbers for their personal contacts. Enter your email in the chat to receive the list. Is there anyone here who has not yet signed? All right, great. The Minnesota OA How Live meeting is a friendly place and we want to get to know each other. If you are here with us for the first time in the meeting room, will you please stand and introduce yourself by first name only? No one here. If you are attending for the first time virtually, please turn on your video and unmute your line or press star 6 on your telephone's keypad.
Hi, this is Abby in Maryland.
Hi, Abby. Welcome.
Welcome.
Glad to have you.
Hi, this is Carrie in Iowa.
Hi, Carrie. Welcome.
Thank you. Welcome. Glad to be here.
Hi, this is Kelly G in Florida.
Hi, Kelly. Welcome. Welcome. Anyone else? All right. And welcome back to all. May we please have a treasurer's report? Here she comes. Here comes Heidi.
Hi, I'm Heidi, compulsive overeater, your treasurer for this meeting. I did not look it up, but I know it's 900 and something. It hasn't changed. I haven't been to the bank, so I need to pay the December rent, and we need to keep a minimum of $500 in our account. Thank you.
Thanks, Heidi. Our seventh tradition helps this meeting provide the equipment, enhance our website, make it accessible to individuals who are deaf or anyone using ASL, refine the technology, develop other live OA face-to-face groups, and more. A basket will be passed for those here in the room and those joining virtually. You may go to minhowlive.org to donate. That is minhowlive.org to donate. I'm going to take a moment to read the promises. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. Are there any announcements here in the room or virtually? None in the room? Any virtual announcements, anyone? No? Okay. Literature and books, newcomer and sponsor materials are located at the virtual intergroups resource page at www.oahowphonemeetings.com. That's oahowphonemeetings.com. You can purchase OA books and pamphlets at the books at bookstore.oa.org. It is now time for medallions. At HOW meetings, we recognize milestones of recoveries for the HOW program. All other OA abstinence is given a round and applause. Anyone joining in virtually may also request a medallion by turning on your camera and unmuting your phone. All right. So we love to celebrate, and we love to celebrate for two reasons. One, we love to acknowledge the milestones that each person makes in this program by doing it a day at a time. When I first came to this program, I said to my sponsor said, we do it a day at a time. And I said, well, how do you lie to yourself every day and say you're gonna do it a day at a time when you know you're gonna do it every day for the rest of your life or are supposed to? And she says, I'm not lying, all I've got is today. And for the first time in my life, I heard what that really meant. So we do it a day at a time and we string those days together. And the willingness to accept this medallion isn't just a statement of what you've managed to accomplish. It is a sign of hope for the many people sitting in these rooms who don't believe recovery is yet available to them. And your abstinence and receipt of this medallion proves that. So starting with that, do we have anyone celebrating 15 to 20 years? How about 11 to 14? How about 5 to 9? 4? 3? 2? 1? 18 months? 9 months? 6 months? 3 months? 2 months. 30 days, the big 3-0, one of the most satisfying days of my life. And now, frankly, the most important medallion of all. It's what says on it 24 hours, but receiving this doesn't mean you've committed to abstinence. It doesn't mean you're gonna have 24 hours if you already have it. It means you've got a desire to do something different from what you've been doing. If you have a desire to stop eating compulsively, we want you to have this chip as a reminder that we're here with you and that we can do it a day at a time. If there's a newcomer out there who would like a chip, we would be delighted to send you one. Just raise your hand and it will be coming in the mail to you. So just let us know that. Is there anyone in our virtual meeting who needs a chip tonight? All right, these are coming your way. We'll do it together with you a day at a time. Oh, we've got someone, an iPad raised their hand. There's a person behind that iPad. Okay. I think that's Rhonda. Is that Rhonda? Okay. All right, Rhonda, yay. Good for you. Walking up to that room to get that first chip was the longest walk I ever took in my life, and it's the best one I ever took. All right. Step up to this point in our meeting, we ask the group to join us as we celebrate another example of the miracles that abound in OA. The stepping up portion of the meeting asks the sponsor to introduce a newcomer who has at least 70 days of back-to-back abstinence and who has completed the first 3 steps of the program, who is now ready to become a sponsor. At HOW meetings, new sponsors are presented with a cactus plant to signify the tough love of the program. Stick with the stickers. Remember, drink your water, and a reminder that we don't water down the program. I don't think we have any step-ups scheduled for tonight. Anniversaries. Birthdays are celebrated for each year of continuous abstinence. At anniversaries, a candle is lit at the beginning of the meeting. We invite the person who's celebrating an anniversary to come to the front of the room for the anniversary meeting. Is there anyone celebrating an anniversary tonight? We would generally know by now. All right. Virtual attendees may sign up to celebrate your step-ups or anniversaries via the link on our website. Please don't hesitate to do so. The leader now qualifies for 10 minutes. That's me. Again, my name is Peg. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Peg.
Hi. And for those of you who haven't met me, I briefly said in the sponsor line, I came to OA in 2004. I walked into these rooms weighing 320 pounds and in a state of suicidal ideation. I did what I was told, I think for the first time in my life, and I did it day after day, and 160 pounds dropped off my body like they never belonged there. And I never looked back. And then I forgot that part in chapter 3 that says, the idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. I knew that it was an illusion until I didn't know that it was an illusion. That's what makes addiction a chronic disease, is because it's the great obsession of every compulsive overeater that somehow, someday, she will control and enjoy her, in my case, eating. And I wanted to believe that. I had all new neural pathways. The food didn't call to me. I mean, I just had all kinds of things that made me think that I didn't need to do this anymore. And by the grace of the universe, I got to a point of enough misery and desperation that I came back. I came back with what was only a 50 pound weight gain. And by the way, there wasn't any of that weight gain that was from sugar. I stayed off sugar the entire time. But it proves I'm a compulsive overeater. It's not about, for me, it's not about the food, it's about food. And it's about putting that food aside and surrendering it that gives me the grace to live this program. So I'm back with what may, for the first time in my life, be at least a desire for humility. I don't think I've been able to recognize how much my pride was in the way of my keeping 12 and a half years of back-to-back abstinence, that sometimes pride was the thing that kept me abstinent. And, you know, humility just can't find its way in when pride's running the show. And so now that I'm back, I haven't lost those 12 and a half years. I haven't lost all the things I gained in those 12 and a half years, but I am a newcomer. I have 6 months of back-to-back abstinence, and for the first time, I'm treating my program as though I have 6 months of back-to-back abstinence. And it doesn't mean that all the rest of that's thrown out the window. It just means that I've learned it's not time for me to step up and act like I've got it all under control, because I don't. I don't know that anybody put me on a pedestal except myself, but I did, and I fell hard. So tonight, I just want to share with you where I am, because that's where I am. I'm where I am today in this program. And where I am right now is on step 9. Let me say ahead of time, this is my least favorite step of the program. And for good reason. Because why? Because I am proud. I do not like to admit that I'm at fault. I do not want to admit that I'm wrong. Being right is my favorite pastime. There's nothing I love more than being right. And step 9 requires me to say, I don't care how much right I want to be, I really did you an injustice here. So step 9 says, good judgment, a careful sense of timing, courage, and prudence. These are the qualities we shall need when we take step 9. It does not say intelligence, a great sense of self-confidence, an ability to speak before thousands. No, it doesn't say that's what's needed. It says good judgment, a careful sense of timing, courage, and prudence. Prudence are what are needed. And One of the things that I'm realizing as I'm working on this step, now I don't, you know, I don't recommend relapse as a way to try and get something that you're missing. It was, it's the way I've come to things that I've missed in the past. And I did a, I think when I was in my program the first time, I did a really good, I think I did a good ninth step. I have no complaints about it. But now I find myself just wanting to get through it. I want to get through step nine fast. I want to get back to that daily inventory that I used to despise having to do every day. And I'm starting to realize I can't go fast. And the reason I can't go fast is because I can't make the amends until I'm ready to let go of the result of the amends. So one of the amends I've written in the last few, I've been maybe working on my I always write out my amends. I read it thoroughly to my sponsor. I let her look under the logs to see where the rats are trying to sneak out and say things that aren't supposed to be said there. And she's very good about picking out some things that might sound a little bit like, and if you had just done it right, we wouldn't be having this conversation. She makes sure none of that language is in there. But one of the amends I need to make is to former employers of mine. Now I've been retired since 1914, so it's 5 years since I've been with these, 1914, I was hardly even born then. 2014, thank you. Well, I'm doing very well for someone with advanced Alzheimer's, so I don't want to hear any more comments. In 2014, so 5 years ago, I retired. And I realized that I am still wanting to say, if only you had, if only you had. So I finally wrote this amends letter to them. And it's a good amends letter. And I thought, why don't I just get that off my plate? Why don't I just decide how I'm going to get it to them and get it out there and let it be done? And I remembered making the amends to my former partner when I was first in the program. And I brought a letter to her. I read it to her face to face, but I did it in a letter so that I wouldn't go on forever. And I finished what I had to say. I said that I was sorry. I meant it. And it did not matter to me for 1 second whether or not she said she was sorry or whether or not she said I did a good job. None of it mattered. I had really let go. And I decided that's what I deserve when I give an amends. And that's what the person deserves. So I'm just aware that in doing my amends, I have the job of doing exactly what steps 4 and 5 do, which say, pray for this person until the resentment's gone. And if it means that it's another 3 months before I actually contact those people and say what I need to say to clean up my side of the street, so be it. It's not about how quickly I get it done. It's about the level of honesty and true letting go with which I work this step. So there's a part of me that's kind of grateful to be working this step with that kind of depth before I go back into doing my daily 10th step, which, you know, I did for years, because I have a whole new appreciation for what it means to look at each day and say, today, how was I resentful, selfish, dishonest, afraid? Where do I owe an amends? And a thorough doing of step 9 in my mind gives me the freedom to really appreciate those steps 10, 11, and 12 going forward. So with that, I'll pass.
Thanks,
Faye. You bet. And now our speaker for this evening is Patty. All right, Patty, come forward.
All right, here we go. Let's see, the host has stopped it. Okay. Well, it says the host has stopped. There I am. Okay.
There you are. Hi.
Here I am. Hi. Okay, Howard, I tried to do what you said. I have my computer a little bit higher. Okay, and I'm supposed to look in the camera, so I'll do the best that I can. I'm Patty. I'm a compulsive overeater from Illinois.
Hi, Patty. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you so much. And so do I have a timer? Do I have someone timing?
Yes, via chat. you'll get the time via chat.
Great. Okay, so if you could let me know when I've gone 10 minutes, and then if you could let me know when I have 2 minutes left, and then I guess 1 minute would be great. So there we go. So I'm ready to go. So you can hear me okay, and you can see me.
You're coming through loud and clear and,
okay,
and a good visual. Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you. So I'm really just going to trust my higher power and share my experience, strength, and hope. And a little background, I'm from a family of nine, so there were nine kids. I'm the oldest girl. I have two older brothers. And I have recently become so acutely aware, painfully so, of how I think I am in charge of others and that I need to take care of others. And I'm not sure how that plays into food, but what I do know is that my family and food, there was definitely this thing of, for me, it felt a little bit like starvation and that there was never enough food. And that I, as a matter of fact, I had to carry food with me up until just a few years ago. I always had to have food with me. Now I have food with me now because I take my food, but it's a different way that I'm bringing my food, and I have a different attitude towards the food I used to bring because I would panic if I didn't have food with me, like this fear, because food was my friend, and food for me was a way for me to soothe myself. And I would say now that I'm in the program that what I find that soothes me would be the tools and also the fellowship and human beings. Before, there was no way I would trust human beings. And I mean, of course, you know, like many grew up in a family of, you know, just a lot of abuse, the emotional abuse, the physical abuse, the sexual abuse, the whatever other kind of abuse you can think of. And so at a young age, somehow I thought I'm going to take care and bring everybody together. And so food for me, sugar was a staple for me. And that was, as a kid especially, we ate lots of sugar and candy. As a matter of fact, there were times in my life, I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but there were times in my life where I worked out really hard. I'd get up at 4:30 in the morning or 4 in the morning and go and work out and lift weights. I mean, to the point, to the extreme, never without sugar. I always ate sugar, chips, always had to have those as my comfort. And so I think for me, the important part, I got married at 18. I had my son at 18, my daughter at age 20, and was married 17 years. Have been divorced almost 32 years, and have been in 12-step programs for about, actually, it was right after I got divorced. I started in 12-step programs. So I've been in several. I currently am in several, and I'm at a place today where I've realized that acceptance is the answer to all my problems. And I can't say that I especially like where I am. I got into another HOW program about 4.5 years ago, and people were talking, when I talked to them about that program, I also mentioned food, and they talked about this OA HOW program, and I just thought, ugh, roll of eyes, oh, I know that I need to be in that program. So 6 months into that program, I stepped into OA HOW, and I'm somebody who's incredibly creative. I don't like people telling me what to do, for sure. And I didn't think I liked structure.
And what I have found is I love the structure of the program. I didn't know that it would provide me safety. So if there's any, I know that there are some newcomers on the meeting. What I will say, though, I was very judgmental when I came into the program, and I thought everybody said the same thing. And I was listening, and I thought, oh my gosh, how can anybody talk for 2 hours? How can they have a two-hour meeting? This is crazy. And then I realized that I was in another HOW program that they had kind of the same format. And I thought, why am I annoyed with OA HOW, where the other one I'm not at this point annoyed with? So I thought that was really interesting. I also thought, what difference does it make 4.0, 3.9, 4.2? Seriously? And I fought that a little when I first came in, but I just did it. And I surrendered. And I had this thought most of my life that surrendering meant I lost and I was letting somebody else win. And I was let somebody else have power over me. And I didn't care if it was a higher power or other people. That was never going to happen to me again, that anyone would have power over me. And by working this program, I think by the time I got to OA HOW, I released a little bit of that fear of somebody controlling me and doing something that was going to harm me. Quite the opposite in OA HOW. I found a fellowship where people will love and support me and be there for me. When I first came into OA HOW, I was dealing with, you know, a family member. And I was, had just had a conversation that was difficult with a family member and they cut me off. And anyway, I was in a lot of pain and I was able to call people in the program who prayed with me, who listened to me, who supported me. I didn't grow up with that. And obviously I was ready to allow people to be there for me. And it's kind of interesting because to me, every single program I'm in, this is just me, it's my opinion, it's about relationships. It's about my relationship with my higher power, my relationship with myself, and my relationship with others. That's where it all lives. And so when I came in, I was in a lot of pain and I followed directions. It's kind of interesting because I had a tendency and still have a tendency to be rebellious and want to fight about certain things. And yet I came into the program and I followed what the suggestions were. It's kind of like, here's what you do. And I followed the rules. And they aren't rules, though. They're not. You know, I remember when I first called my sponsor and I would say, oh my gosh, I failed because I had made a mistake. And my sponsor would say to me, no, you made a mistake. Let it go. Now that might sound like, what's the big deal? Of course you let go of mistakes. No, not me. If I made a mistake, I immediately went to shame and then I was a failure in life. It could be the smallest thing ever. Had so much shame. And that simple phrase of, you made a mistake, let it go, was incredibly healing. I did not expect that to happen coming into the program. That is not what I expected from OA HOW. I really didn't come into the program to lose a whole lot of weight. And for a while I felt like I didn't belong because I didn't feel like I was over, you know, I didn't have enough to lose. I wasn't overweight enough. And I realized that not belonging had nothing to do with the weight. It was, I didn't feel like I belonged, period. It wasn't about OA HOW, wasn't about any other program. It was my not feeling like I fit and belonged, that I had to have certain criteria, then I fit the program. And you know what? There was nowhere in OA HOW where they said, I heard you say it. She said, a desire to stop eating compulsively. That's it. When you said that, I was just like, oh yeah, that's all I had to have. Oh, I have 10 minutes remaining. Oh my gosh, this is so fun. You know, I've been just recently dealing with, my mom passed away in October, and the facts are that when she died, of her 7 living children, 2 of us were speaking to her. 5 of the adult children were not speaking to her. Now, I'll bet some of you could already guess what I did, because my role was to take care of. I spoke to 4 of the 5 I was the one who communicated with just about everybody in the family. I had those relationships. I had worked at those. I was in the, you know, I was in the program. You know, I made an amends to my mom where I told her I was sorry for how I had harmed her. She did some things to me that were very unhealthy. All I stuck with was, here's what I did to your mom, and I'm sorry. And my mom said, I'm sorry too for hurting you. I never dreamed my mom would say that. I had that gift. So back to me and my role in the family, I just couldn't call my siblings. I had found my mom, and for me it was traumatic. She had been dead a couple days. It was difficult for me. So I texted them. Bottom line is that my siblings, I don't know how to say this. I feel like they went after me and now they've bonded and they weren't speaking to each other. They are anyway. So that's the drama, but that's the fact. And so what I'm dealing with right now is the residual of that. And so I now am in revisiting another program. And yesterday I was somewhere where I had some time where I could do some writing. I was so angry. And one of my fears is that I'm going to somehow relapse in OA How. And I have this fear that I'm going to go fast and hard and I'll never get back. I've heard people talk about, you know, they start eating sugar and how hard it is to come back. So I have this fear, which, you know, it just is where I am. And so yesterday I was somewhere, and so I am going to show you a visual. What I did was I started writing. So the first thing I did is I took paper and I just started writing how I felt, all my anger, and I was angry. So it got to a point where I was angry at every human being, and I was, of course, angry at God. I called an OA How member, and I said, could you listen to my writing? So that part where we talk about the tool of writing and literature, so powerful. Because I was this huge ball of anger and rage, and I wrote it, and I read it to her, and I said, and could you please not, at this point, give me feedback? In that, I was at a place where I felt too tender, and I've learned that in OA How, that there were days where I was going to read some writing that was raw, and I felt raw, and I would ask my sponsor, could you please not respond today, and if there's something you want to say, can you give it to me later? I never knew, I didn't have words for that before, but I've learned in this program to be able to do that. So first I wrote that out. The person got it. She listened. And I could let it go. And then I did this thing very intuitively. So wait, I'm not sure how this is going to show up. But this is called a mandala. And I've had them and I used to use them. I'm a lifelong educator. Of course, I'm the oldest daughter of 9. I taught all my siblings. So what I did is I started writing how I felt on the lines. And I just allowed the process to unfold. So I don't know if you all can see it. Oh, look, it's bigger. So what I did is I wrote how I felt. I continued to allow that process. And then in the spaces that are white, so I was angry. I was angry at my brother for how he talked to me. I just let loose and just wrote whatever I wanted to write. I didn't read this one to anyone. But once I was finished, I just looked at it and I used different colors just because. And then in the spaces, I have to read what I wrote. In the spaces in between all the lines, I wrote, free yourself, let go, free you. Let go, free yourself. I just wrote all over it. And then I realized that visual reminds me of my family. and that how we're intertwined and we're weaved, all of that, it's not a straight line, nor is my recovery a straight line. And the reason I did all of this is because I know that when I have really strong feelings, food has been I'm going for it. Because I have been so angry sometimes that I've done things to harm myself. And I feel like I'm doing a really good job of taking care of myself so that I don't. If I allowed that anger to simmer within me and I didn't express it, once it starts to like really build, kind of like a volcano, it'd be like, I'd be gone. So that's part of my process in, number one, acceptance is the answer to all my problems. Other people are not the way I want them to be. That is the hard lesson for me. And what happens is I become disturbed by how they are acting when I think they should be some other way. And when I do a 10th step every morning, when I have 6 people on my 10th step, that is a great measure for me to say, Patty, there is something that is going on with you. You need to change, or you need, you know, on your knees. So these are the things I'm doing to take care of myself so that I stay. Oh, wait, operator, 3 minutes remaining. Okay, thank you. Oh, I'm so glad that blinks. Woo. To stay in this program and to be abstinent, I am doing these things. Another thing that I'm doing is every morning I'm saying the 3rd step prayer. I am saying the 7th step prayer on my knees. I am definitely in a place of humility. I have a lot of recovery and I've had a lot of therapy, and I have to say, I'm kind of self-righteous in regards to my siblings, and probably just everybody, I think. You know, I have this duo thing like, oh, I'm so much better than others, and oh my God, I'm nothing kind of thing. So I'm praying. I've been praying on my knees it's been, I think, almost 2 months. So here's another part of my recovery is I rewrote, because I like to write and I thought some things need improvement. I say the 4th step prayer for those list of people that I resent on my knees. So I say the 4th step prayer and I say the resentment prayer. And there was one day, and I mentioned this, I spoke recently, and I said, God, I do not mean any of this. I want you to know that. Because I was so angry, but I just keep doing it. Just like I weigh and measure every day, I call my sponsor every day, I do my writing. When I make a mistake, I call my sponsor. I keep doing it no matter how I feel. You know, have a good day, I call. Have a bad day, I call. I have a lot of feelings, I call. I'm in rage, I call. I do it. This program has taught me that whatever life is, I just keep doing it. And I have 1 minute remaining. Thank you so much. Okay, so I am going to show you this is one of my favorite things I love to paint. So I hope you can see this. Oops, I'm going to stand. So what I did is I added a few words to the 4th step prayer when I pray for others. So that's my painting, and I'm going to be out of time very shortly. It'll be a good way for me to end. So what it says is, God, help me show whomever the same tolerance, sympathy, love, compassion, and patience I would lovingly and willingly grant as a friend. And there are days when I say it for myself, and I'm ever so grateful that I'm not in the food, that I am abstinent, that I have an opportunity to be with all of you in Minnesota, where it's a little bit colder than here. And I think that has to be about a minute, but I can't tell because nobody's blinking. All right. So with that, I will close. And do I give my phone number? Oh, she says, please stop. Okay. Do I give my number? See, I follow rules. Okay.
Go ahead, Patty. Give your number.
Okay. Here you go.
Central Time, 618-567-7025. All right.
All right. Thanks, Patty.
You're welcome.
The floor is now open for 3-minute pitches or sharing. In How Meetings, we share our experience, strength, and hope. No one is prohibited from sharing, but we ask that you focus on the solution. All pitches should be of a positive nature in which you share your growth and recovery. All other issues can be worked out over the phone or after the meeting. Would someone care to pitch? Virtual sharing can be done by turning on your camera and unmuting yourself. Would someone care to pitch? Someone's trying to pitch his block. Howard, did you see that? One last call if someone would like to pitch. Okay.
Yeah, this is Abby in Maryland.
Thanks, Abby. Come on in.
Yeah. And my pitch for is living in the moment. I want to say thank you to our, I think, Peg and Patty, our leaders. And I learned a lot from listening to you all. But I say in the moment because, you know, we say one day at a time, now or in the present. But I really need to be grateful, you know, to try to do that in the moment because it's so easy for me to slip into negativity. And it's always seemed odd that we include that in our tools, but it really is very important to pay attention to. Thank you.
Thanks, Abby. I want to thank you for allowing me to be your leader for this meeting today. I also thank all of those who participated, especially our speaker, Patty, who gave so much of herself. Thanks, Patty. May we please have a reading of Just For Today?
Hello, my name is Tamara. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Tamara.
Just for today, I will try to live through this day only and not tackle my whole life problem at once. I can do something for one day that would appall me if I felt I had to keep it up for a lifetime. Just for today, I will be happy. This assumes to be true what Abraham Lincoln said, that most folks are as happy as they make up their minds to be. Just for today, I will adjust myself to what is and not try to adjust everything to my own desires. I will take my luck as it comes and fit myself to it. Just for today, I will try to strengthen my mind. I will study. I will learn something useful. I will not be a mental loafer. I will read something that requires effort, thought, and concentration. Just for today, I will exercise my soul in 3 ways. I will do someone a good turn and not get found out. If anyone knows of it, it will not count. I will do at least 2 things I don't want to do just for exercise. I will not show anyone that my feelings are hurt. They may be hurt, but today I will not show it. Just for today, I will be agreeable. I'll look as well as I can, dress becomingly, talk low, act courteously, criticize not one bit, not find fault with anything, and not try to improve or regulate anybody except myself. Just for today, I will have a program. I may not follow it exactly, but I will have it. I will save myself from 2 pests, hurry and indecision. Just for today, I will have a quiet half hour all by myself and relax. During this half hour sometime, I will try to get a better perspective of my life. Just for today, I will be unafraid, especially I will not be afraid to enjoy what is beautiful and to believe that as I give to the world, so the world will give to me. And I pass.
Thank you, Tamara. For those joining us in person, I'd like to ask for your help in putting away the equipment and bringing this room back to its original setup after we've concluded our closing prayer. Thanks for your help with this. We'd also like to thank our skilled interpreters for helping us to reach even more people who struggle with this disease. Thank you. To those who are still new to the program, we remind you that all that was said here today should safely remain here as we respect and cherish our tradition of anonymity. We also assure you that following the program will get your weight off or on. Abstinence will remove the cravings. Our way of life will remove compulsion and time and give you contentment in all areas of life. After a moment of meditation, will those who wish to please join in to say the Serenity Prayer. Those attending virtually, please unmute yourselves. Let's pray for those who are still suffering. God, grant me the serenity.
Serenity.
The things I cannot
change.
Encourage,
the things I can know the difference.
Thy will, not mine. Coming back. It works when you work it. Give a lot of love.
All right. See you next week. God willing.
Bye. Thank you. Yay. Thank you. Right on.
My name's Carrie.
Good night, everybody.
I'm great at remembering faces and names, but just not who goes with what.
Okay.